The route climbed to a high divide that was notched like a gun sight between bald granite cliffs. Humping a big load up the pass, I was preoccupied with the weight biting into my shoulders and the rocks shifting underfoot, so I didn't see the bear until it was less than 75 yards away. I paused to catch my breath, glanced up, and there he was, a 350-pound grizzly, loping across the talus that spilled down from the notch. Because the wind was at the bear's back, he hadn't yet noticed me. But a single route led over the divide, and I was smack in the animal's path. As grizzlies go, it was a relatively small one. His bulk would have dwarfed any lineman in the NFL, however, and the beast's dull, tiny eyes did not convey congenial intent. I was deep in the Alaskan Brooks Range, well north of the Arctic Circle, so there were no trees for me to climb. I didn't have a gun. Running, I knew, might invite attack. Too scared to breathe, I tried to remain calm, but felt my mouth go dry. The bear kept coming. At 30 yards, catching my scent, he stopped abruptly and reared onto his hind legs. His shaggy blonde fur rippled in the breeze. His arms were as thick as spruce logs. Stories of gruesome bear maulings fast-forwarded through my brain. The grizzly sniffed the air, stared at me, sniffed some more. And then he dropped to all fours and bolted in the opposite direction, sprinting across a jumble of tank trap boulders at a speed that defied belief. The date was July 2nd, 1974. 2 decades later, the memory is still vivid. For a long time after the bear ran off, I sat on a rock and just listened to the pounding of my heart. It was an hour after midnight. Mosquitoes swarmed around my face. Far above the divide, a prow of jagged granite burned orange in the twilight, illuminated by a sun that never set. Ranks of nameless mountains marched into the distance, as far as I could see. Over the preceding weeks, I'd become attuned to wolf song and the whistle of golden plovers, walked through a snorting tide of caribou, gazed down from untrod summits, gorged on fat grayling pulled from crystalline streams. And now I'd stared into the eyes of Ursus Arctos Horribilis, only to discover that the star of my nightmares was even more discombobulated by the encounter than I was. I would see 4 more grizzlies before the month was out. I'd climbed and fished in the emptiest reaches of the American West, but Alaska made the wilds of the lower 48 seem insipid and tame, a toothless simulacrum. In the Arctic, for the first time in my life, I was surrounded by real wilderness. Even as a callow 20-year-old, I understood that such an experience in the late 20th century was a rare and wondrous privilege. 6 years later, in 1980, the United States Congress recognized the singularity of the Brooks Range and set aside 8.5 million acres of it as gates of the Arctic National Park and Preserve. A vast sprawl of wilderness the size of Massachusetts and Connecticut combined, gates is the second largest unit in our national park system. Yet few Americans have ever heard of it, and fewer still have actually been there. Gates is visited by some 2,000 people a year, compared to the 9.3 million who visit Great Smoky Mountains National Park, or the 3.8 million who visit Yosemite. This gaping disparity is largely a function of access. Yosemite lies 3 hours by automobile from San Francisco Bay and the region's 3 million residents. Tourists can gawk at Half Dome, El Capitan, and Yosemite Falls without ever stepping out of their air-conditioned cars. Although Gates of the Arctic has scenery that rivals Yosemite and 11 times as much acreage, Gates is situated in remote northern Alaska. It's impossible to drive through Gates because the park has no roads. Within the park boundaries, moreover, there are no ranger stations, no motels, no snack bars, no souvenir shops, no maintained campgrounds, no facilities of any kind. Except for widely scattered game trails, there aren't even any footpaths. The park's administrators do not consider the absence of amenities to be a shortcoming. In the opinion of the National Park Service, rather, the fact that Gates is a hard place to get to, and even harder to get around in, is its saving grace. Park regulations have been formulated to keep development and visitation to a bare minimum. Not